Next step number 641, prime time, September 17, 2020.
Hi there, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. Thanks for tuning into the Next Step with Father Vodskin. We are the voice of Armadoxy, a weekly podcast started in 2008 that looks at life through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. If you're joining us for the first time, we're so glad you're here. And if you're a regular listener, welcome back. In these weekly episodes, you will find that Father Vodskin's messages are timely, thought-provoking, and based on the solid principles of Christ's love, faith, and hope. Now, let's get ready to take the next step.
Yeah, it's a legitimate question. And you've got to get to this question one way or another. I mean, if you're going to take a mature look at your faith, I'm not talking about just like, hey, you know, we're Christian. We're the first Christian nation. We're the 10th Christian nation or the 100th. Hey, we just discovered it under a rock and it speaks to us. Okay, that's fine, you know. I'm talking about a serious look. I'm talking about a serious look where you challenge yourself by the tenets of that faith. In other words, if it says, love your enemy, can you really do that? That's a serious challenge. Okay? It's easy to love your neighbors. And Jesus says that. It's easy to love the people that love you. But he challenges us. Can you love your enemy? You have to. Because it's the God love. That's what God does. So there's all kinds of challenges built into every true religious system. Not only in Christianity. There are challenges. And people struggle with these. Not in a bad way. Not in, oh, how am I going to get over this? How can I do it? And it shouldn't. It shouldn't bring you down to that. But in self-challenging, self-promoting ways that will allow you to become promoting in the sense that it will allow you to become the better person that you can be. There's a story that Jesus talks about, the rich fool. If you remember that, that's the guy who has all kinds of wealth and then decides that he's going to build bigger storage facilities for that wealth. And he's a fool because he doesn't realize that that night he dies. And so all the things that he had accumulated were for who? For nothing. And that's the challenge that particular man has. And in so doing, when he looks out, what's interesting is when you read that, and I've shared this with you a few times, when you read that story, it's striking how many times he talks about the I and the me. I have this, I did this, I did that. Me, 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 me. And Martin Luther King made an observation about that, that fool was really looking into a mirror as opposed to looking through a window to seeing what potential there is, looking outside and seeing a bigger horizon where he could share his wealth. Okay, so I'm going to start off today's podcast with this idea, because here's a question for you. Do you think Jesus Christ was concerned with human rights? I would say yes. And I think anybody who is studying their faith, thinking about it, would say yes. I think there are people who will say no, that it was completely not about rights here on earth, but it was about rights in heaven. And thy kingdom come is something about some future time, not about the world today. And I would beg to differ with them. And I want to share some thoughts with you, because today I got up, there was an article that I read about governors who govern. Here in America, we're having some very, very difficult political times. Never before in the history that I have lived through in the 64 years that I've been around on this planet. And okay, let's say there was 15 of those were like still youth. Although I was a little bit mature for my age. So let's say the first 12 years. Okay, by 13, yeah, I was politically active. I was really getting into it. So let's say for the last 50 years of my life, I've never seen anything like this. And what I've read about, I've never seen anything like this. where we differ in opinion. That's always been the case. In fact, we have party systems in most countries. They have different parties. Here, there are two major parties, although if you check out a ballot, you'll find many, many other parties, but they call them the Democrat Republican Party. And they have their ideologies. One's conservative, one's liberal. And throughout the years that I remember, that there was always a healthy dialogue. Now, there isn't a healthy dialogue. There's just a dialogue which ends at some point where you start pulling the plug. Have you heard of ghosting? This is a term for about 5-6 years. This is, I think, a social media term where they ghost you. In other words, they pull the plug on you. You're no longer, they don't follow you, they don't listen to you, they don't want to talk to you, breaking off communications. And this is very unhealthy, because once you break off communications, you don't have an opportunity to repair anything that is broken, right? And that's true whether it's in human life between two people or it's between you and God. This is one of the greatest tragedies we find when people walk away from God. They've walked away from that communication. Last night I was at a gathering of youth, and some guy, brand new fellow, had showed up at our meeting. And he said, I don't know what it was, but he says, the last few days I've been seeing different things, different formations, in shadows and leaves that have fallen, and they've all been crosses, and they all pointed me here. Now, this was very legitimate for him, whatever you may think, that, you know, how the leaves fall, how the coffee grinds settle, how the tea leaves dry, whatever it may be. You may think that it's purely by chance. You may think that, you know, it's divinely intervented, and, you know, the grinds have come together to point an arrow to the church. Whatever the case may be, he arrived at the church last night and he was with us at this meeting. And he said, I don't know if it's right for me to interpret those signs that I've been seeing for me to come to church today. And in a real sense, yeah, you're here. So of course it's right. You know, if I'm going to make a value statement on that and say, is it right or wrong? Yeah, of course it's right. You're here. But it's a legitimate question. He said, are all these signs, are they always signs? And quickly somebody who was there said, no, they're not always good signs, you know. And I would tend to say a little differently. I would say that those signs are always there. There are signs all around you. You're probably not awake enough to interpret those signs, to go in that direction. I've shared this with you regarding God's presence. Is God alive? Yes. I mean, this morning, did you take a moment to look at the flowers, the leaves of the flowers, and marvel at how those flowers, those leaves have come together, petals have come together to create something so beautiful and aromatic, and say that, you know, this is the divine hand bringing beauty into my life? Have you taken a moment this morning to look into a little child's eyes and see that there is life that comes from God? I mean, these are small little activities that we need to not rehearse. What's the word I'm looking at? Practice. We need to practice. So that just like playing a piano, you know, you become proficient at it, you become an expert at it with the more practice. And wouldn't that be beautiful if you started walking around and started saying that, yes, I do see God everywhere. Wouldn't it be great if you were living every moment and saying, yes, those are signs for me to get closer and closer to God. And certainly this guy coming to our youth meeting at the church, for me, that was a big thing, that he had opened himself up to those directions, because I think those directions are always there. They've always been there. Think about your own journey, your own personal journey, how you have evolved, where you have gone. Those signs have always been there, whatever they may be. Those opportunities have been there. But you have not been. So all of a sudden, you tune in and you go, whoa, this is cool. I'm at the right place. It's working. And I think when we look at it in this sense, you understand that the supernatural, the divine, the God, is working with us. It's not like it's something outside of us. When we talk about the kingdom of heaven is within and without you, a very cornerstone to the gospel, that the kingdom has happened right now. It's happening right now. And it's also without you, that it belongs to everything. It belongs to this universe. I think when you understand that it's always happening, that God is always around, you walk differently. You talk differently. You interact differently. Because now you understand that it's not some freak thing, and by freak I mean unnatural thing, but it is a true daily experience of God existing in our lives. This is one of the issues that we have with the Divine Liturgy. You go into the Armenian Church Divine Liturgy, it's sectioned off from daily life. It's this 1 hour out of the 168 of the week that we have where you go in and you're supposed to wear different clothes, you hear different sounds, you hear different rituals, you hear a different language, and then you open the door and you go, oh, I'm back into reality. Well, can you make that connection between that 1 hour and your reality? That's the secret. If you remember, every time we go through the Lenten journey, what's the first thing that I tell you every year when we go through Lent? It's not about those 40 days. It's about the 325 days that follow it. You use those 40 days to heighten your awareness, to become more in tune, so that the 325 days of the year that follow those 40 days become days where you are working and walking and talking and living at your maximum potential. That's what it means to be successful. We always misinterpret this because we have measured success by what's in your pocket, not by what's in your heart. So we have people who talk about the prosperity gospel, you know, prosperous. Prosperous is not about what you got in your pocket. Last Monday, I did a funeral. 95-year-old woman. 95 years old. Imagine 95 years that heart's been ticking and finally done in because of COVID. COVID-19 did her in. And you start thinking about 95 years. Being a child of genocide survivors, starting off with nothing and creating something, and you look out over the sea of people that have arrived. Yeah, I do a lot of funerals, you know, 95 years. Most of your friends are dead by that time. You don't get too many people showing up at funerals. This was packed, jam-packed. What does that signal? It talks about a life that was full, meaningful, and has impacted people, has touched people. And so sitting there, you realize that the true richness, this woman is truly a rich person. She's not because she had wealth in her pockets, in her pocketbook. Her wealth was in her heart. And that's the challenge that we have as Christians, to understand that success, that prosperity is real. Yes, there is a prosperity gospel, but it's not about give me your money so that you will make more money. Give me your money so that you will have better things. No, plug in. Give me what is essential to you, and you will see that your life becomes more meaningful because you're living every moment with that understanding that God is real in your life. And, you know, we're having a very difficult time in this country because we're trying to put these ideas together. Never has it been in this country where we cannot talk about these things freely, openly. That's been really one of the most beautiful things that I love about being an American, growing up here in America, is freedom of speech. I have that ability to proclaim what I want. And you may not agree with me, but it's okay because we can share ideas without offending one another, because you realize that I'm free to think this way, and I understand that you're free to think your way. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, I'm going to fall in love with what you think about. Yeah, I may not even want to hang out with you. That's okay, right? I mean, there's 8 billion people in the world. Can't hang out with everybody. Nor should I want to. I mean, life is limited, and you want to hang out with people that are going to sort of get it, are going to be understanding, and together being able to do things, to be able to do, to live out your faith. Now, I'm bringing this all up because we are going through this crisis right now here in this country. We're in an election year, and it is about not only Democrats and Republicans, it's about personalities. It is about ideologies, and the ideologies are not grounded in anything except pure egotism. Yeah. It's basically, this is the way I think, and this is the way I am. And the proof of that is, I guarantee you, if there was the election for president of the United States took place today, I guarantee that the election results will be the same as they are on November 3rd. I don't think anybody's changing. You know, obviously, you know, I'm not going to be to the exclusion. There might be a few people. But I don't think that the results will change. I think people are just grounded in what they want to believe. And that belief cannot be swayed tells you that it's not an intellectual belief, but it's a belief that is grounded on your own stubbornness and personality. Think about it for a moment, okay? Before you start arguing with me, think about it for a moment. If it was an intellectual thing, then you welcome debate. You say, let me hear your opinion, and I will give you my opinion. And together we can come up with some kind of a mix. Perhaps I won't move. Perhaps I will. But that perhaps makes it a mature understanding. That's important. There are times in life where you have to look at life not as black and white, but down a gray scale as well. Is there anything wrong with that? Does that mean you're wishy-washy? No, it doesn't. It means you're human. It means you realize that you have to bend. When Jesus stands there and he looks at somebody and he says, your faith has healed you. What faith? What faith? Did he check out their faith? No, but he knows. He has made a concession. He didn't say, let's come, let me test you on your scripture. Let me test you on what you know. He knows because he is able to take in. And making a concession doesn't mean that he's wishy-washy, right? Obviously. It means that he has some knowledge of the person that you and I don't. What is that knowledge? What is that knowledge of the person? That person is a human being. That person has these desires. Of course he wants his child to be healed. Of course he has faith. The man comes up to Jesus and says, sir, help me. My child is dying. Help me. What do you want him to say? Wait, let's inspect. What did you read this morning? Did you read the Bible this morning? Did you say your prayer? No, Jesus says, your faith has saved him. That's it. Of course, because there are certain things that are a priori, right? That are just known. You know it. It's apparent. A parent is concerned about his child to the point that, yes, his faith is there. Jesus is able to sift through all of the nonsense that we put into our games and just come down to the basic thing. Your faith has healed you. Now, I'm asking you a question. Do you think Jesus was concerned with human rights? Human rights. We have a lot of them in this world. We have a lot of issues with human rights. We have people going to bed hungry in a world that can overproduce. We have people going to bed hungry, not in third world countries, but in first world countries, where you can go up to most fast food restaurants, and if not every restaurant you can go to, and sift through their garbage and find enough food that will feed many, many people. I know our In Issues Ministries, we go out there and eat. Our feeds usually average between 40 to 60 people that we'll get into a dining hall per each feed that we do. And you think about like the amount of food that is necessary to feed 40 people with their children, 50 people with their children and everything. You can kind of figure out that, hey, you know, we toss this much. Have you ever gone out to a restaurant and seen how much food is picked up at the end and thrown off? So the point I'm making is we don't have a food shortage. What we do have is we have people who are born into this world and cannot get a meal, cannot eat, are hungry, are starving. Is that a basic human right to be able to find food to eat? Is that a human right? Of course it is. Of course it is. Shelter, is that a human right? Of course it is. How about safety? Is that a human right to feel safe? Of course it is. Of course. In other words, let's get over all this overcomplicating life and just understand, of course it is. Yes. Just like Jesus stood there and said, your faith has healed you. Okay, I'm going to share with you some ideas in the second portion of today's show. I'm going to stop right there, give you a little bit of chance to think about what's been said. I'm going to share some ideas from some theologians, from some people that have struggled with this idea. Is Jesus concerned with human rights? Or what does it mean? And if so, what does it mean for us? If he is concerned with human rights, then what do we as his children, as his family, have to do? We're going to take that up in the second portion. I'm going to play you a song right now that I just discovered this week while watching a serial. I was binging on a serial one late night, and I couldn't get enough of this song. This is Burl Ives doing Rock Candy Mountain. Enjoy.
Oh, the buzzing of the bees and the cigarette trees, the soda water fountain, where the lemonade springs and the bluebird sings in that big rock candy mountain. On a summer's day in the month of May, a burly bum come hiking down a shady lane near the sugar cane. He was looking for his liking. As he strolled along, he sung a song of a land of milk and honey, where a bum can stay for many a day, and he won't need any money. Oh, 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 the buzzing of the bees and the cigarette trees, the soda water fountain, where the lemonade springs and the bluebird sings in that big rock candy mountain. In the big rock candy mountain, the cops have wooden legs, the bulldogs all have rubber teeth, and the hens lay soft-boiled eggs. The farmer's trees are full of fruit, the barns are full of hay. I want to go where there ain't no snow, where the sleet don't fall and the wind don't blow, in that big rock candy mountain. Oh, the buzzing of the bees and the cigarette trees, the soda water fountain, where the lemonade springs and the bluebird sings in that big rock candy mountain. Oh, ho, 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 the buzzin' of the bees and the cigarette trees, the soda water fountain, where the lemonade springs and the bluebird sings in that big rock candy mountain.
Big Rock Candy Mountain. Singing that is Burl Ives. Did you like that? Did you? I love this song. I just discovered it. I had to do a quick checkup on it. So it turns out that this was written back in 1928 by Henry McClintock about, it's a country folk song about a hobo's idea of paradise. And did you catch that about the Bulldogs? I was binging on a series on Netflix the other night. It was the middle of the night, and this song came on. I fell in love with it. I had to go and find it. And it turns out there are so many recordings of it. But this was Burl Ives, yes, of Frosty the Snowman fame. What child doesn't know Frosty the Snowman? Yeah, that's the voice there. I don't know. Was he on Rudolph as well? I think he's Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. That song, too, is Burl Ives. Anyway, I digress. This one was called Big Rock Candy Mountain, Burl Ives. I will have a link on today's show notes. It just kind of took me to a different place. I hope it took you there as well.
Shine on, shine on, harvest moon. Up in the sky, I ain't had no love since January, February, June and July. Snow time ain't no time to settle. Outdoors and spoon.
Ah, yes, you go back into the 1920s, life was easy and everything. No, it wasn't. Life is always hard. Have you ever thought about that? We just celebrated the Feast of the Exaltation of the Holy Cross. And I made that point in my sermon that, you know, we look at the year 2020 and we say, how horrendous is it? It's like one thing after another. I mean, we here in California, now it's been a week that we haven't even seen blue skies. It's been smoky. There's been fires, forest fires. And this is the last of several tragedies, which has included the protests right in our backyard. We've seen we've seen civil unrest on the streets of America. We've seen COVID blanket the entire country, the entire world. And you're going, wow, we're at a standstill. 2020 was a horrible year. Yeah, but 2019 was as well. 2018 was as well. I mean, we just commemorated the anniversary of 9/11. Remember 2001? Yeah, we started off this century with the terror attack on the Twin Towers in New York. Do you remember all the things? Yeah, every time period, whatever way you want to mark it off, has its difficulties, has its moments, has its crosses. And so when Jesus gets up on the cross, you realize that that cross is in everyone's life, and there it is for the Son of Man. He's now gotten on that cross, basically saying that there is no escape from the cross. Yeah, that's a mature way of understanding life, isn't it? That's what we're talking about today. It's about that mature challenge in our lives. When you look at the cross of Christ, you realize that all the difficulties that we have in our lives, whether they're physical, emotional, relationship, whatever they are, there's no escape. Because the Son of Man could not escape the ultimate cross. It's in our lives. And probably just as important to remember, as we're going through those crosses, is that there is a resurrection at the end of it. And that's the difference. That's what gives us that hope in the cross. When you look at the cross, you find hope because you realize that there is resurrection at the end of it. Yeah, you can look at all periods of time, and 2020 is probably, when you look at it, several years from now, 20 years, 50 years from now, you look at it and you say, well, okay, it was a year. just like we look back at 1963. The president was shot in broad daylight. The president of the United States, John Kennedy, who was the hope for the future. You look at 1968, war in Vietnam, children are being killed. In America, the civil rights movement is going full speed ahead. Martin Luther King is shot in broad daylight. Bobby Kennedy, who is the hope after John Kennedy, shot in broad daylight. Oh, what a horrible year. But now we look back on it and we say that, okay, yeah, it was a year. And we look at 2020, we say, oh, wow. It is. I'm not downplaying it. It's got its moment. I mean, I'm not enjoying this 1 week of just being inside the house because we can't breathe outside. It hurts the lungs, you know. It's how bad the smoke is. So today we're talking about civil rights. And the reason I brought this up is because there is an article that I was reading. It's called Governors Who Govern. And we always look for the government to sort of give this direction, right? Governor, by virtue of the name, he governs or she governs. And there's this article called Governors Who Govern. I'll put a link on today's show notes if it is available. I'm reading a hard copy over here and talks about the different governors and what they do. And obviously, we always look for political leaders, and we sometimes shy away from understanding that religious leaders, that hence the question that I have today, was Jesus concerned with human rights? If he was here when George Floyd was killed, would he walk away from that? Would he have a comment on it? Or would he say, render what is, you know, what is the police to the police? Render what is God's God's? Or would he actually stand up and say, this is wrong? We need to do something about it. Well, he did in a sense, right? When he said, love your enemies. Isn't that a stand? Now, I brought out from my library a stack of books that I put in front of me so I could share with you today. Because each of these people that I'm going to talk to you about are religious leaders in their own right. And they struggled with this idea because human rights, when you think about it, the ultimate loss of human life was upon the Armenians back in 1915, right? What is genocide? Genocide means you do not have a right to live. You will be exterminated. And who's the decision maker on that? Someone who is playing God, namely the Ottoman Turks, right? They were sitting back and saying, okay, the Armenians no longer have a right to live. So playing that God role, they say, let's kill the Armenians. They do not have a right to live. The basic fundamental human right. Forget about what we talked about earlier, right? It's not about shelter. It's not about safety. It's not about food. It's about just a heartbeat. Do you have the right to live? Genocide. I have a book called Genocide and Human Rights. And it's interesting because in here it's a special issue of the Journal of Armenian Studies. And it's all about Armenian writers. Now, what's interesting and fascinating to me is that never in these books do you find pronouncements from religious authorities. Obviously, in the case of the Armenian Church, we had a major setback with the genocide. It's not only that the genocide killed the people, it went right for the jugular vein. It went for the Armenian Church. So after 1915, the Armenian Church was crippled to the point that even in Etchmiadzin, in the center of the Armenian Church, 20, 30 years later, there was nobody in there. The Catholicos died. They didn't have enough priests to get together to have a meeting. Because not only the genocide, but then you've got 70 years of state-sanctioned atheism. Yeah, the Soviet Union. Atheism was part of the party platform, so to speak. And, you know, the party said that there is no God, and this is what you will be teaching. And you've got 70 years of that coming. And so for the church to survive in the midst of all this was nothing less than a miracle, and it did. So it does survive. And it comes to us now, and in this book that I'm holding up right now, it's 1992. This is right after Soviet Union had collapsed, okay? And you read it, and there's really nothing in here. There's articles by the usual, you know, Richard Hovhaniemian, Yves Ternan, Richard Ashton, Denis Papazian. I saw another one that I recognized, Dikran Kuyumjan, right, genocide and everything. But nothing from the religious community. And I think that has to change, right? Do religious leaders have something to say? You're going to, yeah, think about it for a moment, okay? Because Armenian Church, we're going to put one side right now because it's just now evolving and coming to the point. And I'm going to share with you a story that just happened a couple nights ago from an Armenian church leader. Yeah, yeah. Dietrich Bonhoeffer. I've shared him many times here on this podcast. Protestant theologian. He was a pastor. He was a martyr. He was a martyr. In many senses, he was a prophet, and he was also a spy. That's right. He was in Nazi Germany. And he saw the evil that was happening. He was witnessing the evil. And while knowing the evil, I willingly gave way to it, says our confession, but he wasn't willing to give way to it. He could not live with it. He could not live with what was going on in this Germany that he was living in. And he went to prison for it. He eventually died. A martyr, a prolific Christian thinker, writer, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, in the Protestant community. In the Roman Catholic community, we have Hans Küng. Have you ever heard of Hans Küng? Probably not. He's out there. I was turned on to him by my ordaining bishop, Archbishop Vache, who turned me on to Hans Küng's writings, because in Edinburgh, where he studied, he was reading him. But Hans Küng writes about his struggle for freedom, about what he's doing from the inside of the church and going out. Fascinating that he's living with these concepts of human rights and freedom. He's writing about them, he's talking about them, applying the theology. That's in the Catholic tradition. And to the point that he was even threatened with being excommunicated, but he persisted by sharing what the teaching of the church was. Okay, those are in terms of Western theology. How about on the East? Well, probably more known to everybody, let's say, of Eastern. There's a lot of Eastern mystics and religious leaders, but the one that is most known is the Dalai Lama, right? Famous because he just won a Nobel Peace Prize several years ago, but he's always on people's minds and tongues, and it's interesting, he's a religious leader that gets quoted. You won't find quotes about Jesus so public and popular as the Dalai Lama's, but you know, here he is. He's written about living. What's his book's name? The Art of Happiness. Finding that happiness. And of course, that happiness has to evolve, has to come into place, but he's in that struggle too, right? Human rights in Tibet, right? There is a political side to that story as well. These faiths do not exist in vacuums. But yes, in Tibet, they've been thrown out, and you know the story. And the Dalai Lama. The Dalai Lama has his pronouncements as well. Now, here in this country, when we come to human rights and civil rights, of course, there's no better than the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. His writings. It's about taking the gospel and applying it to our lives. Applying it not only to our lives with, hey, I'm having financial difficulty this week, but in our relationships with one another, with each other, with our neighbor. And the challenge that, hey, if Jesus said this, it has to have some meaning in our lives today. If he said, love your enemies, then it has to mean something. It's not just, hey, that's pretty. Oh, Jesus said you have to love your enemies. You know, let me write that down. Maybe one day I'll include it in a postcard someplace. No, it's real. He's asking you to do it. He's saying forgive people. Well, these things have to mean something. And Dr. King did exactly that. He took that gospel and he made it pertinent to our lives today. And that's an important thing that we're sometimes scared to say, making the gospel pertinent. We're scared because we feel like the gospel has some divine magical ability to permeate our existence and come out there, and then all of a sudden we are supposed to adapt to the gospel. Never did Jesus do that, right? He didn't sit in a cave and say, let people come to me. He went out to the people, right? He didn't say, okay, this manger is comfortable over here. You know what? I wasn't planning on being born in this manger, but now that I'm here, I kind of like it over here. And if people want to know how to connect with God, let them come to me. No. He went from town to town and preaching the gospel of hope, of God's love for us, and sharing it with people. And in the end, it is about human rights. And this is what's most disturbing for me, the reason why I pulled out all these books, because as a priest of the Armenian Church, one who has gone through so much historically as well, who has a history, a past of oppression and fighting against that oppression, I feel that we have this duty and obligation as Armenian Christians to take that message and to proclaim it outside of ourselves. We haven't done that. We have not done that. We've been so consumed with our own pitiful situation. And I was at something the other day. I felt really bad saying this, but I had to. Somebody came and I was visiting a parish, and somebody came and said, oh, you know, there's this and this, and there's this great book about the genocide and everything. Do you want me to send you a copy of the book? And I said, no. And she looked over at me like, what kind of Armenian priest are you that you would refuse a book on the genocide? I said, you know what? I'm kind of genocided out. Is that wrong to say? Maybe. Maybe, but I'm at a point right now. That genocide has to mean something in our lives. I think that's the strength of the Inner Shoes movement. That's why when these young kids came about and said that, let's define ourselves in terms of in his shoes. Like, that past has happened, and the only way that we could bring meaning to our lives today, or to that message of genocide today, is by reaching out to others, walking in their shoes, people who have gone through the similar problems, realizing that we need to connect with them on a human scale. And that's what Inner Shoes is about, walking in the shoes of others. Why? Because we have been there, and we've always looked for people to walk with us. And it's a simple equation of empathy, right? Being empathetic towards others. So, was Jesus concerned with human rights? Absolutely. He was, because we see in him the hope for humanity. Think about it, okay? If you're looking for Jesus to go out there to a Black Lives Matter march, demonstration, and to proclaim something, if you're looking for a message from the Gospels that you can get out at a Black Lives Matter movement and hold it up on a placard, don't look for it. But if you're looking at the entire story of Jesus, from birth to crucifixion to resurrection to living today in his holy church, you find that message. And it is the message of human rights, one that needs to extend itself and expand itself. So with that as a preface today, I want to share with you something that happened. We live in a community called Glendale. That is, from where I live, we're in Pasadena. The neighboring town is Glendale. It is one of the centers for Armenian life. I believe one in every four person in that city is Armenian. It is probably one of the largest concentrations of Armenians outside of Armenia. And last year, I was invited to the YWCA where we were talking about racism. And I was one of the speakers, and I brought up this point. My sister was with me, so we attested to this together because we lived through it. When we were children, we lived in the Hollywood area, and my father worked in Glendale. He was a pharmacist at one of the drugstores there. And we had, in our family, we had one car. So my mom would pack us up in the evening, and we would go to Glendale to pick him up. And, you know, the one car family. So, you know, we're all in there, little kids. We're in the back seat, and mom goes, picks up dad together. We drive back home. And on our road, on the way going back to home, as we drove through Glendale, we realized that at every bus stop, we would see blacks and Mexicans. And at that time, you just don't think, because we grew up in Hollywood. Our schools were mixed. I mean, my best friend was a black guy in elementary school, James. I don't know how to say, I can't say that we were colorblind. No, we understood that he was black, I was white, but it didn't seem to matter. It didn't seem to matter. And we would see on the way from Glendale, people at the bus stops, and they were always just blacks and Mexicans. And we'd drive past and we'd go to Hollywood. Well, later we found out that Glendale was what's called a sundown town. And in other words, that people of color needed to be out before the curfew, whatever the time is. I think at sunset, there's a curfew. So if you are a person of color, you need to be outside of that town. This is happening like late 60s, early 1970s. So on a scale of things, it's not really a long time ago. It's 50 years ago. 50 years ago. And so last year, when the YWCA was entertaining a conversation about racism, I got up and I shared this story. It's exactly the same way and the same terms that I did with you a moment ago about my dad and us seeing this scene. And I and my sister corroborated. She shared the story, the reality of it. Well, I'm pleased to tell you that just a couple nights ago, the city of Glendale passed a resolution unanimously, a resolution by the city council acknowledging Glendale's racially exclusionary past as a sundown town. And I'm going to put it up, I'll place it on the show notes. I invite you to read it. And at the end of it, be it resolved, you know, the Glendale acknowledges, apologizes, and condemns all racially motivated, discriminatory, and exclusionary aspects of the city's history, and deeply regrets the pain, the hurt, and suffering such policies have caused. And it goes on. So I do want you to read this. Now, it was unanimously passed in the city council. What's the big deal about it? You're saying Glendale, just a small city. The big deal is that an Armenian priest got involved. That an Armenian priest took the message that we proclaim in the church and said it's about human rights. The big deal is that we have to start understanding that this message does not belong in a manger. It needs to go out. This message has a salvific value for the world today. Yeah, I said it. It's not about the life to come. Last night I was at a Bible study, and they're the same, yeah, at this youth meeting that I was at. And it was a Bible study about justification by faith versus justification by faith and works. And my question was, why justification in the first place? Think about it. I know it's the basic question. Where are we going? That needs to be solved. But instead of worrying about where are we going, how about talking about where are we today? And what does my faith have to do with that today, that real life experience that I'm living today? That's the human right aspect. That's the aspect of I'm living a life that has meaning today. Yeah, you know, the basic questions are, where did I come from? Who am I? Where did I come from? Where am I going? So in that question, to answer that question, where am I going? You have to find out, does God love you? Does that, forget about all that. And accept that he's a loving God and he loves you. He cares about you. Now understand that he's given you a plan by which we can find peace on earth, because Jesus Christ came. And when Jesus Christ came, the angels spoke, and what did they say? Peace on earth, goodwill towards men. This is it. When Jesus left, he said, I leave you peace. This is the peace that you need to spread. It's not the kind the world has given you. It's the peace that I'm giving you. And that peace needs to be spread in the world. Was Jesus Christ about human rights? Absolutely. Does religion, does our faith have to be concerned about human rights? Yes, absolutely. Does Christianity? Yes, because it is a Christ-based, and therefore it has to continue the message and the mission of Jesus Christ. If it's going to be called the Church of Jesus Christ, it has to be willing to take on the same commission that Jesus Christ took on. When he came out of the wilderness to begin his ministry, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to preach the gospel, the good news to the poor. He has sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, recovery of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who are oppressed, and to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord. Was Jesus Christ about human rights? Do we as priests, as congregation, as followers, not only have a right, a responsibility to be concerned with human rights? Absolutely. That's it for today. And the piano player is here, so let's go out with that. I'll be back in a couple moments to close it up, okay?
Here again, popping in to say thank you to you, our listeners. We are thankful for your prayers, kind expressions, and donations. You make this podcast possible. Your listenership and support has allowed us to grow and expand our ministry around the globe. We are grateful to be able to touch so many lives and create lasting friendships. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world, and look forward to your continued support. Thank you, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, for that announcement, and thank you. You can't believe what one of your letters does for me. I receive a letter, I receive a comment, and it just keeps me going. Thank you very much for your love, your support, your beautiful words. They are beautiful. Even if it's just a small little line, they are beautiful, because it's in the eyes of the beholder. Trust me, on these days when I'm just sitting there and reading your letters, I thank God every moment that we have this ministry, and I'm very thankful that we have an ability to reach out in the way we do. On a personal level, I'm very thankful because I have an outlet. It's become like a personal blog, of an audio blog, where once a week I get together with you, people that are listening, and we share some ideas, and I look forward to hearing from you. If you want to drop me a line, I'm at feedback@epostle.net, and that's apostle with an E, because we're apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe. I've been saying that for how many years now? We are trying to expand it, and it is not easy. It's not easy. Sometimes it's downright impossible, I want to say, but I know that there's always a time and a space for that. We are continuing with our Bible studies, and we are continuing with our outreach, with our vlogs via the Western Diocese, our feeding of the homeless through In Issues Ministries. So the ministry is alive and well despite what's going on in the world, despite the pandemic. We are accommodating and making it work the best we can. If you're interested in reaching out to the homeless, we have made some provisions for our Madach meals. Those have become very popular. And in recent times, because of the pandemic, we haven't been able to serve them. So we've made provisions where we are actually ordering the food and doing a drop off. If you're interested in that, drop me a line. We hope to have the form up on our website. But in the meantime, just drop me a line. Be happy to send you the form. You can get involved in feeding the homeless here in the Los Angeles area. And if you're interested in starting it in your area, let me know. We can maybe work out something and help you get started. I'm going to call it a day today. I hope you enjoyed today's show. I know I did. It was just kind of like I said, these are audio blogs and it's cathartic because I'm like listening to what's going on in the world. And I know that we have an answer. The Armenian Church has an answer. And don't ever doubt that. The Armenian Church has been around for 2,000 years, despite coronas and viruses. We've had the big-time viruses, which is called hatred and genocide. We've been around, and we've been there, done that, so let's learn from that. Been there, done that, okay? That's what we try to do. So with that, let's call it a day. I want to thank you for joining us on behalf of this wonderful team who put today's show together. I want to invite you to get involved with us on all the socials and, of course, at the mothership, inissues.org. So on behalf of Susie, our producer, Ken, our technical director, this is Father Voskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Take your breath, cut out.